This is the Athletic Hockey Show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Athletic Hockey Show, Touchon's One Frank edition. Frankie Corrado will join Down Goes Brown, Sean McIndoe, and me, Sean Gentile, here shortly. But we're here for segment one. Frankie will be around. We actually recorded it already. Here's a little peek behind the curtain, folks.
Oh, wow. You're doing this?
Like this.
Okay.
We talked to Frankie for like a solid half hour. He's dealing with beautiful new twin baby girls, which is why he was out last week. And he found time to talk to us about John Tortorella and Puck Over Glass and a bunch of stuff that you couldn't torture me to have that conversation after dealing with seven-day-old babies. No, thank you. He's a trooper.
And all about Sean Couturier. So like extra Sean content on the podcast.
Three Seans. Three
Seans. Talk to two Seans about a third Sean.
Neither of his daughters is named Sean. Maybe next time.
Yeah.
What have we learned, Sean?
Buddy, what did we learn this week?
Here's what I learned. I am done with predicting and prognosticating the Eastern wildcard race. I'm done. Lucy has yanked the football on me so often. So what have we done? Okay, we did at one point it was the Islanders are done. They fired their coach. Yes. They didn't get the new coach bounce. The Islanders.
They might have been done twice, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah. Then they win five or six in a row. And we're all like, Islanders are back, baby. Islanders are back. They're going to make the play. Nope. Uh-huh. Just, we got you. We're actually not good again. The Red Wings, same deal all year. What's happening with the Red Wings? Suddenly they're winning. They're unbeatable. Not only are they going to make the playoffs, they're going to run away with this thing. Nope. Just kidding. We stink. We can't win a game.
Bad. We're actually out.
Now we're starting to do it with Washington. I feel like we kind of did it with the Sabres a little bit, but maybe they're next. The Penguins, obviously. I'm done. I'm done getting suckered in and declaring some team is going to make the playoffs only for them to immediately lose four in a row. I've seen this gimmick enough times. You're not getting me again. I'm done. Tell me at the end of the season which team has earned the rights to absolutely get their doors kicked in by the Florida Panthers or whoever, and I will pay attention at that point. But I'm done sitting here at the beginning of every segment talking about some team that's won five in a row just so they can immediately go and lose 7-0 to the Blue Jackets the next night.
Buddy, here's what I've learned. I'm not done yet.
You fool!
Here come the Caps, baby! They are the one that's going to come. Like, I mean, am I joking? Am I not? I can't really say. But it would only be fair after the joke of a season that we've seen in the Eastern Conference, where you didn't even mention New Jersey, who's in the midst of the biggest slog of all. And then they go out and beat Pittsburgh yesterday.
Sure.
These races are embarrassing. It's only going to be appropriate that a team that I have given zero serious consideration to since the start of the season, at no point from September or October or November on, did I think that the Washington Capitals were going to be within whatever, a 9-iron shot of a playoff spot here. Yep. And they are. Now, should they be?
No.
Of course not. Right?
Seven teams that I'm looking at. The 16, Detroit is holding down the last wildcard spot today by points. So you've got Detroit, you've got the five teams chasing them, which is Washington, New York, Buffalo, New Jersey, Pittsburgh. And you've got the Flyers as well, who are still in danger based on getting caught for third spot. Those seven teams.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington Capitals in their last 10 games have gone 6-4 and have gained ground on all of them. 6-4 is the best record in the last 10 games of those seven teams. Six wins in a league, 12 points, a league that gives points for losing, a league that gives points for coming close enough You tried really hard and you almost won tonight. Here's half a win. And 6-4 is enough to gain ground on everybody.
And like, how is this happening? Is the it's question number one. We don't know why, but this month you can look at it and you can say, all right, Charlie Lindgren's been good, because he has. He's tied for the league lead with a .940 save percentage in March, and the power play has been, you know, fine. Right, they're top 10. I think they're. I want to say they're sixth in the league in power play conversion for March. That alone is enough, and that's how bad the East is. If you have like two things that are kind of going right, you know, yeah, across the board, it's enough to vault you into playoff position. Because on balance, this team stinks. Jay Fresh outlined a bunch of this on Twitter last night, but it bears repeating here.
Charlie Lindgren,
yeah,
.940. What are we doing? Why do people like us write and talk about hockey as if there's anything to analyze here?
Charlie Lindgren
is going to go .940,
dude,
and that team's going to make the playoffs.
This is you could literally track it to like two or three hot streaks by Charlie Lindgren. Like that's why this is happening. He was really good at the start of the season. There was a little bit of a lull there for him, you know, probably in February, but he's been good, and that's enough. This team is 29th in goal differential at 5-on-5. They're 24th in special teams goal differential. They're 30th in overtime goal differential. That's it. That's not voodoo stats. That's not complicated stuff. That's not expected goals percentage. That is actual performance that should boot a team from this conversation months ago. And they're, you know, they woke up in a playoff spot yesterday. You know, they had a night off, so it, you know, we'll see. But it's unbelievable. Like you look at this team and you say, what are they good at? Tom Wilson, fourth on that team in points with 31. He's got 31 points in 65 games. He's their fourth leading scorer. They're 29th in goals. Like, how is this happening?
Dead last in the conference in goals scored.
They either win one goal games, they're 16-2-4 or something, or they get smoked. That's it. Yep. That's their MO. I'm done trying to explain it. I'm psyched for the next month or whatever when they can really take hold of a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Unreal.
And by the way, because this is the part, as you well know, as soon as you start talking about any team, start saying anything negative, you can hear people, right? Well, you obviously don't watch the games, because if you watch the games, you would know that this team is really good. You know who probably does watch the games? I'm thinking Brian McLennan, the GM of the team, who just sold at the deadline, who just ran up the white flag, was like, we're not good. Here's a bunch of guys. You mentioned Tom Wilson, fourth leading scorer on the team. It's actually Anthony Mantha's still the fourth leading scorer on that team. They traded him away. They trade away Edmondson. They trade away Kuznetsov. Like, they sold. They got a bunch of picks, which is what bad teams are supposed to do. So good for them, because they knew what they were. They're a bad team. But this is a year where a bad team is going to get into the playoffs in the East.
Maybe not just one.
Yeah.
Like, we're like, what, eight playoff spots? Like, how many good playoff teams? How many good Eastern Conference teams are there? Five, maybe?
I think Tampa's good. I still am worried about Tampa. So I would, but I don't think Philadelphia is good. And by the way, if you could bet on, like, will one of those teams, Philadelphia, Washington, or those teams behind them, Detroit that we mentioned, one of those teams winning a round, like, what would you, 50-50 probably at this point, that they're going to come in and just...
I love it.
Charlie Lindgren will go 980 against Carolina or against New York or Florida.
Yeah.
And what are we doing? The sport doesn't make any sense.
I love it. I've come to appreciate the fact that, you know, the Red Wings are a great example. There's no reason they should have hung around as long as they did. Mm-hmm. They're there with the Caps in terms of 5-on-5. Just
explained to me by Red Wing fans what's going on, and that was that the vibes. I don't know if you heard this, Sean. The vibes were immaculate. And then I guess they forgot to turn on the vibe machine. Somebody tripped over the cord and pulled out the vibe machine, the plug on the vibe meter.
They have a they're plugged into the Dylan Larkin's pretty good, and everyone else is shooting 20% machine. That one ran out of batteries.
Dylan Larkin might get on some heart ballast this year, the way that they the way they fell apart as soon as he was gone. I think it doesn't make any sense.
I think people should be less precious about this, and fans of these teams should be less precious about it. If you like the Red Wings or you like the Caps, or to a lesser extent the Islanders, the Flyers, like, you should feel good about the fact that your team, despite being mathematically, observationally bad, has a chance to make this happen. Like, that should be fun. It's like, savor the flavor of having a junk team potentially squeak into the playoffs, because it's a lot of fun. Yeah. We haven't seen anything like this.
Don't do the whole, we're actually secretly good.
No.
But what you can do is nobody believes in us, which is a very, very fun card to play. And it's accurate in this case. Nobody does believe in your teams. Nobody should, but nobody does. So go ahead. Or, the Islanders have lost 10 more games than they won. And yet, they're right there. And by the way, I'd be scared as hell to play the Islanders in the playoffs with Ilya Sorokin. But who knows? But maybe it'll be Sergei Bobrovsky. Whoever this year's version of that is.
If you're a Cavs fan, you should just be like, yeah, this team is garbage, and it's going to be great whenever,
especially
we roll into Carolina and beat the Canes in five. Despite
if you're a Caps fan, how many times did it happen to you the other way? How many 120 point seasons did you have where Yaroslav Halak or whoever would run it? Now you get to be that team. It's fun.
Everyone should lean into the fun of watching bad teams play well.
Going into the playoffs with no expectations as a Leafs fan, I'm begging for that. Man, that would be so much fun to go in.
You have expectations.
Exactly. That's not fun. That stinks.
The expectations that they lose in the first round. Okay.
Yeah.
On to Frankie.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, we're back. Frankie's here. Buddy, you had a pretty big deadline week, or post-deadline week acquisition, right?
That's right. Yeah, a couple lifetime contracts signed. We're thrilled, man. We welcomed our identical twin girls last Wednesday, so they're a week old today, and they're doing great. Mom's doing great, and the last week has felt like a month, not going to lie.
I'm so excited for you, and also you're done as far as time.
Yeah. The days of the week will no longer have a feeling, which is actually when you're a player, like when you're playing, you have no idea what Thursday or Tuesday or even Saturday feels like. Saturday might have a little more of a feeling because if you play on hockey night in Canada, that has a buzz to it, but everything else is just, it's just a blur.
Sean, like how old were your kids before you actually had a sense of what day it was when you were waking up? Has it happened yet?
It's a while. I mean, it's school. When you got to get, once you get them into school or at least daycare, where it's like, all right, it's Saturday, I got to deal with these things all day now. But no,
watching
they don't.
Hockey's different. Watching hockey's a little different now. Like now it's like, hey, let's get the PVR going. There's like an iPad situation like next to you. You're trying to MacGyver these kinds of setups. So we're getting there though.
I just want to reinforce you have two of them too.
Two
babies, not one. Good Lord.
Yeah, man on man defense right now.
See, when you have to switch the zone, that's that's when stuff gets ugly, I've heard.
Yeah.
All right.
Torts always. When I played for him, he was adamant. He's like, we play a zone defense here. So we'll see. Maybe I can learn from Torts.
That's such a pro segue from you. My God,
that was
you're back. You took 1 week off. You're dealing with two infants. You're back in prime form.
Yeah.
We're still talking about Torts. We're going to be talking about that for I think a few more days. It seems like it's something we could see again. Honestly, if the results on Tuesday night are any indication, scratches Sean Couturier, Philly wins. They look pretty good in the process, beating Toronto in regulation there. Yeah, but Frank, you said it, man. You have some experience playing for this guy. When you see him make a decision like that, because that takes an added level of juice. This isn't like a normal lineup decision. Like sitting Couturier down, especially after everything that's gone on this year, is a wild one. So what goes through your head when you see something like that happen?
A lot of things. Okay, the first thing that comes to my mind is it's not uncommon for veteran players who are very good or were once considered very good and a big part of their team. It's not uncommon for them to be healthy scratched at points. It's not a big deal. It happens. The thing that's very significant about this is when someone's your captain, there's a lot that goes with that. And, your captain plays so many different roles within the organization, within the room. You know, he's a little bit of a buffer between the coaching staff and the players. You know, there's a communication line there. Like, your captain is supposed to have a different kind of relationship than the rest of the players with the coach. And to healthy scratch your captain, I think it takes away some of the credibility of that player within the locker room. And that's what's so difficult about a situation like that. I'm of the belief that if you think it's going this way for that player, you A, have to make sure you're talking to him more than another player. You kind of owe him a little more leeway in that regard. And what I mean by that is you got to warn him, like, this is where we're headed if your game doesn't pick up. I don't think it's not a motivated thing. I think it's one of those things where it's like, the game is literally not there where it needs to be, but like, I'm going to give you some time here, but just so you know, like, if it doesn't pick up, this is where we're going. So you give them ample runway. The other thing that really comes to light here, and Couturier was talking about how, Torts has said, I want more, I need more. And he's like, I don't know exactly what that means. Mm-hmm. That's all he told me. I need, like, with a guy like that, you kind of owe it to him to be a little more specific. That way you eliminate any of the excuses where it's like, I literally fed it to you exactly what we need and you still couldn't do it. So then at the end of the day, say we've exhausted all our options and this is where we went. I think it's interesting that it's the captain, that it's a very significant person to be healthy scratched.
And you're talking about giving him runway, just like before, because whatever, we could talk about this forever and I'm down with that. We should say specifically that in a story that Kevin Kurz, our buddy who covers the Flyers here, wrote yesterday, like, the agent is pissed because he's telling Kurz yesterday, like, essentially, we don't know exactly what is going on here. Like, there was no explanation. There certainly was an adequate one. It didn't seem like there was one at all. So, is that kind of explanation is that an explanation that a fourth liner gets, or like that a seventh D gets,
that kind of player, like that kind of guy. And that's who I was, right? I was, I was a seventh, eighth defenseman. I walked into the rink every day, and if I didn't see my name on the board, which was much more often than not, I was like, okay, it's just another day. Like, no one really needs to give you an explanation. Mm-hmm. You kind of know what you are, right? If you're in the lineup, it's great. If you're not, it's just another day in the NHL, and you just kind of, you go to work that day. For him, like, when you're a captain, you're owed a little more because you have that communication line. Like, the captain is able to go into the coach's office and talk about things more than other players. It's a different kind of relationship. But this is the way Torts has operated for a long time. I think the other moment that really sticks out to me is the Heritage Classic back in 2014 where he chose not to play Roberto Luongo and he played Eddie Lack in that game. And that, like, and it's funny that Torts did this against Toronto. I think if this happens against Columbus, it gets some cachet in like the local market. It might make a couple headlines, but you do it against Toronto, man, everyone's picking it up. National media in Canada, especially national media in the States, it really becomes a story. So that's two instances that I can think of: a Heritage Classic game, which is a big deal. You don't play your franchise goalie and then your captain against the Maple Leafs. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that's on purpose. I don't know if it's just a coincidence, but it is interesting.
During the GM meetings too, like, Briere got asked about it in Florida yesterday, which is not something that would happen under normal circumstances, right? Like, you're typically not going to have a GM answering lineup questions, especially one that's that huge on the day that it happens. But, you know, as it stands, he has to sit there and talk to LeBron and CJ and Elliot and all these guys that are down there for that. So that's another kind of round of, you know,
Toronto angle reminds me a little bit of the you guys may not even remember this. A lot of people listening won't, but back in the 90s when Steve Casper, the Boston Bruins, benched Cam Neely and Kevin Stevens in a game, Hockey Night in Canada at Maple Leaf Gardens. And when I say bench them, he didn't scratch them. They dressed, they put on the uniform, and then they sat on the bench for 60 straight minutes and didn't
play.
That's
so embarrassing. That's so embarrassing to do that.
Yeah. And by the way, I should say Steve Casper was a rookie head coach. John Tortorella, not so much. So, Casper was gone the next year.
When do you think the last time, like, when's the last time that happened in the NHL to dress a dude, let alone two, and sit them for
discipline,
for awful discipline. I wonder what that
it wasn't like they had a bad shift or a bad period.
Yeah.
And this is Cam Neely. Like, a guy who's literally given his body. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen. Just for context, according to TVA, this is the first time in 10 years that a captain has been healthy scratched for reasons other than getting some rest, like at the end of the season sort of thing. Ed Jovanovski, according to TVA, was the last guy. That was in Florida, and that was his last year in the league. He had
resurfacing surgery that year, so he was banged up. And this is the other thing with Couturier that is important to point out. He's a player who's been hurt a lot over his career, and he was hurt at one point in January. And by all accounts, you know, some of the local Philly media members have kind of said, like, he's one of those guys who really downplays his injuries. And, you know, something could be lingering, something could be bothering him. And he's the kind of guy that'll say, nope, not an issue. I'm 100%. As long as I'm on that ice, I'm 100%. And speaking from experience, like, you get hurt or you have things that come your way as a player, you have this tunnel vision focus, warrior mentality, and you're like, that doesn't matter. And no one really cares if you have things that are lingering. As long as you're on the ice, you're going to get treated and critiqued like everyone else. And Sean Couturier obviously has that. So I do wonder if maybe there is things lingering, but he's been downplaying the significance of it. But, like, we were talking about this on the Leaf panel last night. It is such a bold move from Tortorella, because if he pulls it off, he looks like a genius, and it's just another chapter in the story of Torts knows how to push his players' buttons. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't pull it off, it becomes a big distraction, and it backfires on him, and you lose the room. And, you know, you go back to his time in Vancouver, he was there for 1 year. There was a lot of turmoil that year. There was the Luongo thing. There was going down the hall to fight Bob Hartley, which I think a lot of players in Calgary's room wouldn't have minded if he got a couple shots in on him. But by the end of the year, like, the act had gone tired. But last night, it turns into another chapter, and Torts knows what he's doing, and the team wins the game, and they played hard. Like, that's the thing that really comes to light. They played hard. They took it to the Leafs for the majority of that game. So hard to argue with the result they got.
The difference, I feel like, between Vancouver and Philly is that, you know, the Canucks hiring him, who knows, but it always felt like a desperation move, right? After all those years where they were close but not quite, and then something needs to change, so they bring him in. And it was clear from the jump that whether he's hired as a mercenary kind of situation, as clear from the jump that it wasn't going to work. Like straight away, the mix was off. Ain't the case in Philly. That guy is clearly a franchise pillar. He's a big part of the plan for them moving forward, for better or worse, like whether you agree with it or not. Like, he's a big part of what they're doing. He's a big part of what they're planning on doing. And he has sway there that he certainly didn't have in Vancouver, and that I think not a ton of head coaches have, period, throughout the league, let alone a guy that's coaching, you know, a team that theoretically is in a rebuild. So, man, it seems like it means even more coming from him. By the way, he named, like, he didn't need to name Sean Couturier captain in January. Kidding. That was a choice that dude made. Just
we should say in January, not 2 years ago, like Ed Jovanovski.
The middle of January, mid-January,
weeks ago, 5 days ago, or something like that. Yeah. I can't remember, but it's really bizarre. The other thing that I remember about my time with Torts, and a lot of players that have played for him have really echoed this. There's two things. Some guys will play for Torts and they'll say, man, I wish I played for this guy sooner when I was younger, mm-hmm. because he really could have helped me in my game at a different point in my career. And then there's some guys who play for Torts when they are younger and they say, I didn't appreciate what I had. Like, he really wanted to make me a better player. And I realized how good he was after the fact when I mm-hmm. went and played somewhere else and saw some different coaching. So that's another thing. Like, Ristolainen had talked about that this year, where he kind of said, like, I wish I had this guy earlier. And Cam Atkinson, who also got healthy scratched, no one's talking about that, obviously, mm-hmm. because the Couturier thing's a big deal. And I think that just goes back to the point where it's like, you know, veteran guys sitting out is not a big deal. It does happen. It's just more significant when it's the captain. But Atkinson had said, like, I've been healthy scratched by Torts before. And it's almost like he's bought into the fact that every once in a while he just needs it and he comes back and he plays better. But he's bought into, like, I think, you know, Torts knows what he's doing and he knows how to get the most out of me. It's weird to think that way, though, as a player. You always want to be out there and you always want to be a big factor.
Part of what surprised me was last night after the game, and I guess maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but Tortorella doesn't say mm-hmm. anything. It basically no sells the question that he knows is coming. Again, like, you're doing this against Toronto. Like, it's your biggest media night. And, you know, he acts kind of, you know, surprised or offended that somebody's asking him about it. But, man, like, to not have that explanation, to have the agent pulling in. And by the way, we should say Sean Couturier has got 6 years left on a big money contract that has a lot of bonuses. So it's not even a buyout target.
You know, he's still only 31 years old, by the way,
here, man.
Well, John Couturier is 31. How about that?
It feels like he's a lot older. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, like, at the start of the year when Couturier was playing and Philly was doing well, it was like, oh, they just got, you know, this is found money. Sean Couturier is playing and he had a good start to the year. So, like, and that's why I kind of go back to Sean, like, maybe he is banged up and maybe he is minimizing it, because we've seen this year that Sean Couturier can be a good player. And maybe it just is a little bit of a rut, or maybe he is banged up, whatever the case may be. But, you know, if he can get himself back to feeling good, have a good summer of training. It's always hard. It's hard when you go into an off season and you're not 100% because mm-hmm. you're nursing something and you're in that, like, kind of rehab state while everyone else around you is making gains and you're just trying to get back to that even par, to put it in, like, a golf perspective. Mm-hmm. Now everyone's in the summer, they're making birdies and eagles and they're going into, you know, camp feeling great. So maybe that's something for Couturier here. He has some time left on his deal. He's obviously making a lot of money. He can just stay healthy, you know, get some good summers, compound that, and maybe you are feeling better. I don't know. It's hard, though. He's been so banged up.
Doesn't it feel like any other team, any other coach would have just said, hey, the guy needs a night off. Yeah, he's banged up. He's a little bit, you know, our captain's a little banged up. So, you know, he's going to sit out and we're going to go win this for him. But they made it really clear. Healthy scratch, not good enough. I mean, it was like right there. The easy excuse. I don't think anybody would be like, I don't think Sean Couturier is really hurt. Yeah. He's banged up.
The lowest he played this season was the game prior to this against Boston, mm-hmm. right? Like, that was, I don't even know what the ice time was. I just know it was the lowest.
He benched him. They benched him after he backchecked and helped set up a goal. And then he didn't play a shift after that. It was bizarre. Is there this is something that I've always wondered, and I don't know, you can speak this as well as anybody. Is there like an ideal personality type to play under Torts? Like, who responds? Like, what kind of guys respond to the buttons and the levers that he pushes and pulls? Like, is it like mouthy dudes play better than him? Is it like alpha, like more quiet? Like, who is the ideal Torts player? Because you look at the guys that he's had trouble with or the guys that he's benched, and there's like not a clear through line on that from the outside. Like, what kind of dude does this guy like?
I think there's two types of guys. I think there's the guys that, for lack of a better term, they make it seem like they have zero give a shit level. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where it's like, yeah, nothing really bothers me. Say what you want. No problem. I just do my business. I operate the same way every day. There's that guy. But I think the other guy that does well under Torts is the guy that's okay with going back at him and not letting his ego get like drive it. You know what I mean? Like, it's mm-hmm. not your ego driving it. You're not taking it personal, but you know a lot about hockey and you're very confident in your ability and you can kind of stand up for yourself. I think Torts really likes that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, like, in my experience, when I played for him, I was 20 years old. I was not going to say boo to anyone. Whatever you say, no problem, right? Like, shut your mouth, play hockey, do what you're told, and that's the end of the story. And I never felt that Torts took advantage of that. Like, I always felt like he was like firm but fair in the way he communicated with me. And I'll give you an example of that. The very first time I got called up to play for him, actually, let's go back even further. Let's go to training camp. 20 years old, just played in the playoffs. We got swept by San Jose, coaching change, whole new staff, all that kind of stuff. 20 years old, come into camp. I actually had a good camp. Like, I was pretty happy with it, but there were 7 or 8 defensemen there. So he brings me in after the last game of the preseason. I had a goal and an assist against the Rangers. And he goes, first thing he does, he goes, you had a good camp. We're sending you to Utica. He goes, there's no sense in you being here unless you're going to play every day in our top six. And even then, it's probably not worth it for you. You should go play a lot of minutes in the AHL and just be ready to get called up. I said, okay. And that's how quick it was. And it was, you know, it was fair. And then I get called up later in the year, probably sometime in December. And he comes up to me. He goes, you need a little time to adjust here. So he goes, I'm not going to play you a regular shift. He goes, you're going to play, but you're not playing a regular shift. So I don't know what your ice time is going to look like, but it's not going to be what you're kind of expecting. I said, okay. So the first few games, I probably played 7-8 minutes. Like, it was really tough to play those kinds of games, but I knew what to expect. Like, he had kind of told me that. And then after that, he came up to me, he goes, okay, you'll get a regular shift now. And then I started getting the regular shift. So there was communication, but it was blunt and honest. There's one other moment that really stands out to me. I had played a pretty good game. Alex Edler was coming back from injury, and we were actually on the plane. The way the like taking him off IR worked, like, we traveled mm-hmm. from Vancouver to LA, and on the plane ride down, I woke up from a nap and the team services guy tapped me on the shoulder. He goes, hey, Torts wants to talk to you. So I go to the front of the plane, and sure enough, Torts goes, hey, come sit next to me. He's got his laptop out. He's doing some video stuff. He goes, obviously, you know, Eddie's back, so we're sending you down. So you'll fly out of LAX and go meet Utica. They're, I can't remember where they were, maybe San Antonio. So it wasn't too bad. And then he goes, I just want to show you something. He goes, this is our video clips that I'm showing the team tomorrow. And he goes to a clip. He goes, this is a really good job by you. It was like a defensive zone clip. He goes, just wanted to let you know, like, this is going to be in the video tomorrow. Great job. Couple things. And then, you know, go play well down in Utica. So listen, I don't know, like, everyone has a different experience. That's my experience with Torts. I always thought he was honest, but, you know, very, very blunt in the way he communicated. And sometimes I didn't like it. Like, there were certain things that you just didn't like because mm-hmm. he can, you know, kind of fly off the handlebars. But I think after it's all, you know, said and done, you do appreciate how honest he is with you.
Yeah, unless you're Sean Couturier, and then you're like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We do have GM meeting stuff to talk about. That's always kind of a mixed bag. I feel like coming out of it, it's, you know, there's always going to be some rules tweaks. There's always going to be, it's like, it's same shit, different day for general managers meetings. But we do have relevant stuff to talk about. We've got tweaks to the replay system potentially, right? Where we're going to have coaches challenge are going to be able to be used on puck over glass penalties and friendly high sticks. What do we think of this? Is that something that you're happy to see, or is it just incremental enough where you're like, who cares?
Well, it feels like there's an appetite from a lot of fans to actually eliminate some of the video review. The problem is we've gone down this road now where we've really made a point of saying everything is so important. The stakes are so high, right? The points in the regular season are so important when it comes to the playoffs. Then you get into the playoffs and every game, every little, you know, incident can sway the momentum in a playoff series. So it's so important to get these things right. So I get the validity to both sides of it, but we've gone down this path where, you know, everything is kind of having a video review. So it does make sense that something like, you know, puck over glass or friendly fire, high sticks are able to be reviewed. It may slow things down a little bit, but, you know, when you see the way coaches are getting fired left, right, and center, you know, and you see, you know, how high the stakes are for everything. I don't know. How do you guys feel? Don't you think we kind of owe it to the players and everyone to be like, listen, we're just going to get it right. And if it slows things down, at least no one got the short end of the stick and we got as many things right as we possibly could.
DGB has puck over glass thoughts. You're about to hear them.
See, I've got both because I get and I got a lot of people pinging me after this news came out because I can't stand the puck over glass rule and I can't stand replay review. So now you're taking the two things I hate and mushing them together. And I think people expect me to be more worked up about it. Like, you know, that now it's twice as bad. And instead, I just look at it as two bad things coming together to still be a bad thing.
You know, we've consolidated two bad things. Hey, two wrongs don't make a right. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just two wrongs just make a wrong. I puck over glass. Look, I have had this conversation 1,000 times. I understand there are people out there who swear, absolutely will swear to you that there was an epidemic of guys just shooting the puck over the glass all the time before we had this rule. I have no recollection of it. Nobody can ever give me a specific example. Nobody can ever give me a clip, but people swear it used to happen. To me, it's icing. It's exactly the same. You know, Frank, you're in your own zone. The pressure's on. Whether you flip that puck over the glass or you turn and you shoot it down the ice, you're delaying the game. It's a cheap, boring, unentertaining play. Treat them the same way. Now we're going to do this replay review. My issue with replay review is always, you know, you said it, the argument in favor of it, just get it right. Does it feel like we're getting it right? Does it, you know, does anybody look at goalie interference reviews and go, man, we're nailing all of these? I really,
goalie interference is an opinion.
Yeah.
At this point.
And I've written about it. I've written about how it's not as confusing as people think, but even I can get to like 80 or 90%. It's not 100%.
Yeah.
Offsides where you're looking at, I will never for the life of me understand why we have to look at offsides a millimeter, because that's how the rules say. Meanwhile, you score a goal off an offensive zone faceoff, you go back and look at the replay, there's eight guys with their skates over the line, eight guys drifting into the circle. It's completely, we throw the rule book out, nobody cares, nobody wants to review it. And you know, some of this other stuff, remember the one last year in the playoffs with Edmonton and LA where there was a LA, I think, scored an overtime goal, but the Oilers were saying it had touched a high stick. And man, we analyzed that like it was a Zapruder film. We had like Oiler fans were showing this shot from outer space. And they're like, look, that proves it. And you're just like, and everybody's arguing. And that's, it had nothing to do with the play. Like
that's
a lot of these.
That's replay culture, man.
They like, have nothing to do with anything.
This is my old.
As soon as the league says we're going to hand out these get out of jail free cards, fans and teams and everybody says, well, I want my get out of jail free card. I got scored on fair and square, but I want it to not count. So let me have a replay. So bottom line, if we're going to use replay to get rid of some puck over glass penalties, I guess I'm okay with it. The friendly fire high stick makes sense to me because that happens a couple of times a year. You know, this is not going to be, but this thing we have now where you've got guys whose whole job it is to just watch the game and
two guys. And then, I've sat in this room. I've been healthy scratched so many times that you try finding different places to watch the games. So yeah, sometimes you're like, I don't feel like going up top today. You know, maybe I'll check in with the video coaches, and you just leave. You can't even be in there because one guy is on the earpiece and he's got his computer going and he's clipping everything. And at the same time, he's ripping everyone. What is he doing? Is he an idiot? Like, I got to get it. And then the other guy, he's got another TV. Every entry into the blue line, he rewinds it and he just makes sure everything's okay. Like, these guys are constantly going at it. But I think you bring up a good point about the puck over glass and how things have changed over the years. Because I remember being like a younger hockey player and coaches saying, if you don't want to ice it, just shoot it over the glass. Because at least, you know, we'll get a change. But like now that you can't just make it so that you can't change on either, right? You don't need to make it a penalty, but now you got your guys stuck on the ice at least. Maybe that's a fair
enough penalty. Explaining to a new fan that, okay, if you shoot the puck and it goes over the glass there, that's 2 minutes, no matter what, even if it's overtime, even if it's a five, I'm going to make it a 5-on-3. That's 2 minutes. Yeah. You shoot the puck down that way, it's kind of a penalty, but it's kind of not a penalty. And also, if you shoot the puck over the glass, but it goes over the bench too, that's totally fine. You know, like imagine explaining this to people.
Puck over glass is like in the Down Goes Brown.
You guys don't.
And I did. I gotta say,
you don't want to hear my radical rule change.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys are ready for this. 3-on-3 overtime, no offsides, no blue lines. Just let it fly, baby.
Love it.
You know what? Maybe that solves the problem that the other thing that the GMs are talking about, which is they're not going to change, but it feels like we're at a tipping point where everyone is sick of these regroups that keep happening. And maybe that's how you do it.
My whole stance on three, like my overriding view on 3-on-3 is that it's enough of a joke and it's far enough removed from normal hockey where you might as well just lean into the carnival game aspect of it. So it's like, fine, throw offsides out there. Like, you're not allowed to make change, like whatever, just no changes. How about that? You gotta have the same or whatever point.
Like, that's matter. That like we're already at a gimmicky stage. I think anyways, like, we're playing 3-on-3. I think it's great. I love it. It's entertaining, but it is a gimmick. Let's call it for what it is, right? The game's played at 5-on-5. We went to 4-on-4. Now we're at 3-on-3. Like, what's stopping us from just saying there's no offsides? I don't know.
And if there's a penalty, 3-on-2. Forget this going back to 4-on-3. Let's really embrace the chaos. Let's get crazy.
3-on-2. Yeah.
3-on-2. Yeah. 2-on-1s. I don't care. Let's
go beer league style. Yeah. You get a penalty in overtime. Guy gets a penalty shot, but everyone gets to chase him from the blue line.
I love it.
Two-on-one contest instead of shootout to after overtime, too. Just have two-on-ones instead of one.
We had that in our rules card where somebody said, get rid of the shootout. Instead of being breakaways, it's a two-on-one. Great. That is, to me, so much better. I would love to see two-on-one shootouts, but I do love the idea of the penalty shot. I could just picture, like, Kuznetsov getting caught by, like, the entire team before he even gets to the blue line.
Exactly.
But
if you're chasing the guy, so you take the penalty in overtime, the guy gets the penalty shot, everyone's chasing. If someone gets a false start on the blue line, they're eliminated from the chase now. So they got one less guy chasing.
In order to know if it's a false start, you'd have to have replay review. So what we do is we grind it to a halt. Everybody gets to review. Here's my one rule that I want to make. I understand with puck over glass that we're never going to get rid of it. And I will say, 10 years ago, I wrote a piece on Grantland where I said, this is the worst rule in sports. It is completely stupid. I've come back off that a little bit. I've had a few people sit me down and go, look, at the very least, it makes the defenseman think twice before they do the, you know, just try to chip it off the glass. It, you know, maybe, which I'm always kind of like, yeah, because that play has really been eliminated from the NHL. You don't see that 50 times a game. And like, you know, we still do. Here's my one request. Keep puck over glass, keep it a 2-minute penalty, but if the puck goes over the glass and the other team starts waving their arms around going, the puck went over the glass, Mr. Ref, that's 2 minutes too. You get them on 2 minutes. Nope, put your arms down with this, like, dude, teacher you forgot to assign the homework.
You're just
going to
get all the Italians penalties, all the Italians in the league, or you're just going to have them in the penalty box. What are you doing
well,
to us?
This is, because then what would happen is, that is one
this is the latest example on this podcast of anti-Italian discrimination. Yeah. Yes.
That's one guy would put his arm up to go, oh, ref, look, it's, you know, because it's always like, have you ever seen a ref go like, yeah, thanks, man, I forgot the rule. Thank you for reminding me. One guy would put his arm up, and then the other team would go, well, that guy put his arm up, and they'd start waving their arms. Eventually, you wipe out everybody on the ice is in the penalty box. We would break the Flyers Senators penalty minute record in the first period of the first game, and we'd have we'd basically have goalies on goalies for the rest of the period. And to me, that wouldn't be any dumber than the way that we do it now.
I think we just did the GM meetings here. Like, I think we solved everything. Just like how I think I solved the Jager bobblehead situation. It has to be Christopher Moltisanti. No, like, Pokemon it has cards. To be from The Sopranos. Like, that's all he does. They jack things off trucks. Like, it's Armani suits, it's rare Pokemon cards. Now it's Jager bobbleheads. I think that's got to be it.
It was Vespas one time.
It was
like Vespas. Vespa scooters. That was another big one. Pokemon cards.
We got it. We cracked the code.
Uh-huh.
There we go.
All right. Someone mentioned Kuznetsov there. And as producer Jeff said at the start of the segment, when we were talking, I believe his shootout attempt he's made it to the paint. He is at the goalie. The world's slowest shootout attempt last night against the Leafs. He's got 5 points in 7 games. Adds just a different element, I think, especially to their second line. Right, they needed some kind of skilled dude playing behind Aho there. What do we think of him so far? And I know everyone watched him last night. Like, what's the early return on him for you guys?
Low risk, high reward, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that. Like, high ceiling offensively for that team, mm-hmm. which they desperately need. I love the move, and I think Justin Williams had a big part in that because they played together in Washington, right? So that's that makes sense because he's still involved with that team. That. Mm-hmm. But Carolina, as far as all the teams that were looking to address needs, they've got to be at or near the top of the list as far as what they did, because, you know, Kuznetsov gives them a playmaker dynamic when he's at his best, when, you know, one of the better playmakers in the NHL when he was really at his best. And 100%. Jake Guentzel, who's a pure goal scorer, but not just a pure goal scorer, like a playoff, big time playoff performer. I just think they really changed the dynamic of their team. And watching them last year get eliminated, it's like offense was so hard to come by for them. Like, for mm-hmm. them to generate one goal, it felt like, man, they got to play in the offensive zone for a long time. And it's not easy to do that in the playoffs. So, you know, I think they are taking a risk in a way, but I think the benefit is going to be much higher because it looks like he's motivated and he's found a half a step, and it kind of looks like he's found a purpose. Like, I think that's one of the biggest things. Like, you know, maybe he felt like there wasn't as much purpose in Washington, you know, for him anymore. And now he's, you know, he seems like he's revitalized in that regard.
Eight points for Guentzel too, by the way. So, like, it's working so far.
I feel like I was one of the only ones who didn't love the Kuznetsov trade. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of people refer to it. I think you used the term as like the low risk, high reward. And my feeling was, I'm not sure it is low risk because they gave up a third round pick, which is not nothing. I mean, that's an asset, especially at deadline time where, you know, you that can turn into a player down the line, or it can turn into some other move that you make. It wasn't a freebie. And I was looking at it going, man, there is a non-zero chance that they just got themselves a lemon here. That he's going to be a guy who's going to come in. He's not going to fit. He could be a distraction. He could be a negative. And if he does, you're on the hook, even with the 50% retention, you're on the hook for $3 or $4 million next year. That felt risky to me. But the upside, the ceiling, was what made it worth doing. I think even Carolina understood that, hey, we might be, you know, we're taking a big swing here. We might swing and miss, but if we connect, we might really have something. And then you got a second line center for $4 million that is, well, that's an excellent value. Sure looks like that's what they got. So,
well, and that's the thing about going to a team like Carolina, where you just kind of slide in. You just have to do what you do well. No one's going to ask you to do more than that, because coaching staff has established the, you know, the standards there as far as what the effort levels are of consistency and compete level and all that kind of stuff. So he's surrounded by a super competitive team that plays hard. And he even talked about it. He goes, now I'm on the other side of hell and I get to see what this looks like. And maybe this is actually fun. You know, so I think that that kind of playful comment really kind of shows like how excited he is to be on a team that's already built really well around him. And now he's just got to do his thing. And, you know, he'll have to, he just has to follow suit. He just has to follow suit with what they're all about, because everyone else is doing it around him.
And we might get that playoff matchup in the first round. Welcome to the other side of hell, Carolina versus Washington, first round. How awesome would that be?
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. I just feel like if it wasn't going to work, we'd have seen it already too. Like if he was going to come in and if the buy-in wasn't going to be there and it was going to be there could be a honeymoon period, right?
First time he doesn't backcheck and Rod yells at him or, you know, finds him eating a cupcake or whatever it is that gets you in trouble.
I think Rod will be the kind of guy, like, I think Rod would be the kind of guy, like it might be a bad backcheck, like you just said, and he's just going to go up to him, pat him on the shoulder and be like, hey, bud, we don't do that here. You know what I mean? Like, you're better than that. Like, I think it'll be that kind of relationship, which I think will bode really well for both parties.
Love it. Frankie, this is really good. I'm glad we stumbled upon a recurring segment, which is, again, anti-Italian discrimination. We'll be here to talk about that every other week on the Athletic.
We'll find more examples. It's okay.
They surround us every day. Thanks again, bud.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we're back. Doubleheader of sad news to hit the NHL coming out of the last couple of days. Former enforcer Chris Simon died at 52. His family confirmed on Tuesday night that he died by suicide in a statement that they released to the media. From that statement, this is a quote from the family. The family strongly believes and witnessed firsthand that Chris struggled immensely from CTE, which unfortunately resulted in his death. In the other unfortunate bit of news, Konstantin Koltsov, who was a first-round pick by the Penguins in the aughts, died in Miami. Police say that he jumped off a balcony there a couple of days ago. He was 42 years old. There's no easy way to talk about this stuff, but it would be unfair to let it pass, Sean. And I know Chris Simon in particular, we'll start with him because he's a guy who we all watch for a really long time. He was a force in the NHL for good and for ill, I think, over a long, long time.
Yeah. I mean, I've written a bunch of times about sort of my somewhat conflicted feelings on enforcers in the NHL. Mm-hmm. Like, I grew up loving these guys. I grew up in that era where we didn't put a lot of thought into what was happening long term to these guys. Those guys were my favorites, and now yet another guy who filled that role, who's gone far too early, and you know, under circumstances that should have a lot of people asking some questions, and obviously we've had these conversations over the years. Did not have them back then. Should have. I guess the thing you say about Chris Simon is, I mean, this guy was a tough guy. He was an enforcer and he was scary when he was quite, you know, quite possibly for stretches, the scariest guy in the league. As far as if you stepped out of line and the gloves came off, Chris Simon could do a lot of damage, but he was also a hockey player. This was not a one note guy. This was a guy who famously scored 29 goals one year. That was one of 7 years that he hit double digits in goals, scored 144 goals over the course of his career. And this is a guy who played almost his entire career in the dead puck era. I mean, to score 20 goals in 1999, that was really something.
It takes something.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was, you know, a lot of these guys could play a little bit. And a lot of them were real good players, you know, coming up and then did what they needed to do to stick in the league. And you know, Chris Simon would be a guy that would fall into that category. But boy, he was a guy back then. You certainly couldn't miss him on the ice. I mean, he was one of those guys. He had the long hair. He was huge. You watched him the entire game. If he was your team was playing against Chris Simon, you were watching him going, I hope he doesn't score. But even more than that, I hope this isn't a night that somebody pokes the bear, because he was a force out there.
You don't get 864 games played if you don't have some trim.
Look, he played that role, and he took a couple of real big suspensions in his career. You know, we're not gonna act like he was that he didn't have his moments out there where he crossed lines, blew past lines, but he was a guy that could play. And now we're unfortunately in a what feels like a very familiar situation with guys that were in that category,
mm-hmm.
where we're kind of looking around wondering what was the story here, what got missed, what was done or not done to help and support somebody who may very well have needed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're asking some of the same questions about Koltov too. I mean, he's 42 years old. He's a coach in the KHL. His girlfriend Arina Sabalenka is an elite tennis player who's won a major. You know, it's a crazy thing to wake up to. I think that he's understandably he's not a name that rings a lot of bells for NHL fans at large, because he's a first round pick, but little bit of a washout, played parts of three seasons in Pittsburgh. Those three seasons in Pittsburgh for me were like pound for pound. That was the most NHL games I ever attended were over the course of those 3 years, because I've said this before, the Penguins were horrendous. Tickets, you could find them laying on the street. So we took advantage of it and went to tons and tons and tons of games. Koltov was a first round pick. He was one of the few guys who never played for them in the aughts glory years, you know, with Tail and Lemieux, and he didn't make it to the Crosby years either. There was a few years there where they were horrendous, and you know they rolled out some brutal lineups, and he was, you know, for better or worse, part of that. The thing I remember about him, and this is not a joke, is he's the fastest NHL player I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen anybody skate faster than that dude. And he popped in a very real way. And that kind of skill set was why people thought that maybe he was going to be part of, you know, a set of good teams here, right? Like, because you're like, oh, this dude, you wore number 71. He was the last guy to wear it before Malkin. I mean, he was a memorable dude in his own way. And I was sad to see the news. And again, it's a tragedy, and the police are involved, and it's, you know, it doesn't seem like we're gonna have any super easy answers all that quickly. So yeah, it's been a tough few days here. It's a shame to see too. It feels like this stuff just happens in waves with this sport in general too, where it's like it tends to not be one. It seems like this stuff happens in groups, and it's always tragic to see.
Mm-hmm.
So we're ending on a low note, and that's a shame. But we will be back. We'll be back next week with just me and Sean. No Frank next week. Thank you, folks, for listening. Leave us a 5-star rating and a review if that's your thing. And tomorrow is Haley, Max, and me. So catch you then, and talk to you soon.